The lectionary reading today on this first Sunday of Advent comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 24, verse 36 through 44. In this, we're hearing about Jesus speaking to the disciples about the times to come. This is often referred to as part of a small apocalypse within the gospel. Listen to the word of the Lord from Matthew 24. But about that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so it will be with the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken and one left. Two women will be grinding meal together, one will be taken, one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I used to live in Peoria, Illinois. Not bragging, just fact. Garden spot of the universe it may be, with all the Hiram Walker breweries, the Pabst Blue Ribbon breweries, and Caterpillar tractor factories. Nevertheless, you may find it hard to imagine, but some days I needed to get out of town. So I took a vacation. I left July 12, 1982. I was going to Rocky Mountain National Park. It's a two-day drive from there. I drove from Peoria up across the vast meadows of Illinois, across the vast wastelands of Iowa, through the flowering meadows of Nebraska, finally reaching Rocky Mountain National Park. The whole way there, I knew exactly where I wanted to go. It was a place I'd backpacked at before. It was a little place, a little place. It just took a half an hour or so to reach it by foot, surrounded by tall pine trees, a carpet of pine needles, right alongside the roaring river just below Lawn Lake. I went to the ranger station when I arrived late in the day to get my backcountry permit, only to discover that every permit of the day had already been taken. So with a heavy heart, I drove to the other side of the park. There's a Presbyterian camp there, and I knew the director knew that I'd get put up in an empty log cabin for the night. I could wake up early the next day and get my permit for this place where I had in my mind exactly where I wanted to go. The next morning, I woke up for breakfast. I was eating in the dining hall when Sue, the director, burst in the room and announced that just a few minutes before, Lawn Lake Dam had burst. It was July 14th, 1982. 30 million cubic feet of water came down in a torrent, 18,000 cubic feet per second down the roaring river. It tore out the whole hillside. The flood went on into the valley. It sent 4 feet of water into downtown Estes Park, down Elkhorn Avenue. It left 2 feet of mud in its wake in every business along the way. The guy who first heard the dam break said it sounded like an airplane crash. I drove up Trail Ridge Road. I looked down below into the valley to see what had happened. And it was an otherworldly sort of view. It was this sea of mud all down the hill and into the valley and on down. There were boulders as big as pickup trucks, bigger than pickup trucks, I know, because there were pickup trucks being moved alongside with them in the flood. It had an otherworldly quality. The known world swept away. And that campground I planned on tenting at that night was totally wiped out, disappeared. 35 years later, I go back. It still looks like a flood zone. A lot of tourists come and see the alluvial fan. They climb around the boulders, and I am one of them. But I have to tell you, when I'm climbing around there, I am always a little bit nervous. I'm aware of what happened. When the Bible talks about a flood, I think about that image. It's an awareness that something can happen with almost no warning that tears out everything in its path and everything swept away. Life is fragile. What do we know and what don't we know? We don't know when the dam will break. We are told in this passage of Scripture this morning, be ready, be aware, be alert. Awareness is a spiritual discipline. Awareness can be internal or external. Internal, you can be aware of what your thoughts and feelings are and what's going on there. And external, you can be aware of what's going on in the world. It's a call to an awareness. In part, it refers to this flood of Noah. It was a time when the world had become corrupt. But the amazing thing is the corruption began in small ways. In small insults to the outsider, and pretty soon it grew and grew, and the whole society became corrupt, and God washed it all away. Beware, be alert, be awake to those internal corruptions, to those external corruptions in the world. Be aware, when will it come? Early in the morning, deep into the night, we don't know. Be aware. Consciousness, I think, is part of an awareness of the dynamics of corruption in the world that can lead to a complete breakdown. Life is fragile. Beware of the corruptions, the drip that can turn into the stream that can undermine the core corrupted that can make the dam burst. There had been at least three trips up to that dam where people saw that a leak had formed in the dam. They saw the small leaks and they thought, well, nothing can come of that. But it's the small leaks, the drips, that turn into the bigger problems as the corruption grows. And all of a sudden, it can grow exponentially. What are the little corruptions in our lives? A small lie, a hatred held onto and nurtured, a racist idea or joke, an infidelity, a harshness, a lack of welcome to the stranger, as in Noah's time. These little things that can grow into a flood. Hannah Arendt was the premier researcher into the dynamics of the Nazi concentration camps, the death camps in which millions of people died. When she began assuming that the relationship between good and evil was something that were polar opposites. That's not what she found. In particular, she saw it in the life of Adolf Eichmann, the architect of the idea of the death camps. Arendt went to see him at his trial. She expected to see him as he had been described, as a monster with a sadistic personality and an insatiable urge to kill. But what she noticed instead was how ordinary Eichmann looked. As he sat in court, he didn't look sinister at all. This doer of all these horrible deeds looked quite ordinary and commonplace. He looked like a bureaucrat. Rather than being rooted in evil motives and demonic forces, he was a bureaucrat who'd been given a job to do, and he went about doing his job in the most efficient ways he could conceive. Eichmann couldn't set himself outside of his role. It was an inability to engage in critical thinking, Arendt says, that was key to his thoughtlessness. She writes, quote, "The only specific characteristic one could detect in his past, as well as his behavior during the trial and his preceding police examination, was not stupidity, but a curious, quite authentic inability to think. He was neither perverted nor sadistic, but terribly, terribly, and terrifyingly normal. What characterized him was sheer thoughtlessness, an extraordinary shallowness, and a quite authentic inability to think." End quote. He raises the image, or she raises the image, of the ordinariness of the everyday that can end up being caught up in the dynamics of evil. If Arendt is correct and it's thoughtless and the inability to think critically, that helps us to think anew about the importance of this call from the Bible on the first Sunday of Advent to be awake, be alert, be aware of the small corruptions that can grow into a flood. Be aware, alert, pay attention. Practice paying attention and thinking critically. Isn't that part of what we do here in the church? In our discussions, in our mission, in our adult education, in our sermons? We think critically about what's going on in the world. We have to be able to talk about difficult subjects, because we are called to be the people who are alert to the dynamics of evil in the world. What are the leaks that are out there? That small drip that could become a stream, that could become a torrent and a devastating flood in no time at all. Pay attention. Advent is a season when we are called by God to pay attention to the small things that can turn into devastating things. I've been paying attention in the news lately. There seems to be an awful lot of people that feel empowered to speak out for a white power racism that's been reinforced lately. We ought to be troubled by that. Those sort of things we need to pay attention, be aware of, the small things that can turn into a flood. And Advent is a season when we're called to think about Christmas. And in particular, that makes us think about children. How are children treated in the world around us today? In so many ways, children are treated as really a commodity. They're treated like little consumers. They're taught to want more and more and more, and then we come to think of children as being there for our use, and that if a child's not going to bring us happiness, then they're considered optional, dispensable. Christmas is a time when we're called to pay attention to the children of the world. Being adults and members of the church, we have a vocation from God. The high calling of the Christian community is to be people who care about the vulnerable ones in the world. So we make promises, don't we, to the children and to their parents, to help them raise their children on behalf of the Christian community and on behalf of God. We do not raise up children to conform to what we as individuals might desire, but we're agents of God to participate in the continuing mission of redemption. to help bring them out of the corruption of the world and into the light. Children are a gift. They are not there for our use or for our happiness. They are there as a gift by God. We receive the gift with gratitude, and we respond to them and treat them as each and every one of them is a gift. We pay attention to what it means to have children and to welcome them into the world. A true gift given and accepted in love. And we need to pay attention to children. Pay attention to the stories that they're told in the culture around us. How violent those stories are. How vicious, how hate-filled. And pay attention to the stories that they need to be told. And who will do the telling of those stories? That's the call of each and every one of us. Each and every one of us to spend our time and to make time to tell the story, to share with them in the celebration and help them to feel that the flood that may come may not just be a flood of devastation and destruction, but the flood that comes with the birth of Jesus Christ is this flood of love that can come in a torrent and it can change the world. That's our story. That's the story we've been given to share. Be alert, be aware. It's our time to share that story. Darkness and light are the stories of Advent, the images of Advent. Martin Buber, the great Jewish theologian, saw that evil could come about simply by being distracted, by lack of attention. As Buber says, quote, "One strays from the path of truth when you become distracted." Advent is a call for us to get focused, to pay attention, to be alert and alive to the possibilities of God's coming into the world. Advent is our call to wake up, to be alert, to be alive, to pay attention, and to open ourselves to the possibilities that God is giving to us in the birth and in the light and life of Jesus Christ. May we be awake, alert, alive, and aware to the coming of this love and this grace. Amen.